Welcome everybody. Here is your boy Sharon Smith, and we're on Iambic Podcast. And right now I got the man supreme, the actor, the poet, the podcaster. I'd like you to introduce you to Jorge Quintana. How you doing, man? How you doing?
Man, I'm doing good. I'm grateful to be here, especially with someone as knowledgeable about podcasting and sound as yourself. And I'm geeking just being around like, everything, you know?
No doubt, man. Thank you for coming out. No, I know you because we know each other for a while and stuff, but I know you also do my show coming up, my Sacramento Poetry reading show coming up on January 6th. For all those people that didn't know, he's going to be here. And I just wanted to do this thing for you to give more people more information about you, more of a little more in depth than just for them listening to your poetry. Give you something more for them to say, oh, okay, I know him.
Oh,
so
yeah,
that's what
man.
I was trying to do about this.
And I just want to say thank you for inviting me. I'm so excited. I've been preparing. Not the last week, but I've been preparing just, okay, what kind of content do I want to deliver?
Okay.
I have a manuscript that I finished that's just not anywhere yet.
Okay.
So I definitely want to read from that. And I'm just kind of like, okay, like you know, Sharon invited me out. I got to do something dope.
Okay.
And so I'm working. I'm working with the levels. How much spoken word do I want to include? How much written work do I want to include?
Okay.
But January 6th, y'all need to come out because it's going to be a great show. It's going to be a great night.
Well, speaking of great shows and stuff, this man here came to last month. He was the third place winner of Sacramento Poetry's first Poetry Slam. And I was the one that hosted. I was one to be the host of that. And I was one that excitedly gave him his check when he basically won that thing. And he was like, yeah. He basically was one of the three. He beat out five other poets. And they're all gunning for you.
Oh,
they were all
no.
gunning.
And it's like the poets that I ended up beating out, those are poets that have beaten me out before.
Well, yeah.
So looking at it, when I heard that I made it in the top four, I was like, what? Like, are you? Just being in third place was intense. I mean, first place to fourth place, there was like 1 point difference, you
one
know?
Point.
And in first place, shout out to Natachi. In second place, shout out to Brandon. Wow.
Nice.
What delivery. Like, hearing them spit, I was like, all right, this is how much work I have left to do that I'm just going to keep. You know, it was, what a slam.
Most definitely. But let's get into that. Do you consider yourself a slam poet? Because I have heard your podcast. If you haven't heard the podcast is called The Spirit in Poetry. That's my man's podcast. Check it out on, you can check it out on iTunes. It's on Anchor. It's also on Spotify if you want to hear that.
Yes, please.
Do you consider yourself a slam poet or just a poet? Because you put on there a love poet.
Yeah,
and then you change it up, and I'll say the next name after. But
yeah.
let's see how you feel about it.
I would say, if anything, I don't necessarily call myself a slam poet because I see people in this slam genre that just the way they deliver, the way they come, the way they own the stage. Mm-hmm. I'm not there yet. I just saw Buddy Wakefield, and it was like seeing this is where I want to be. That is the sound I'm chasing. I love the way he mixes conversation and spoken word, slam elements. And every time I compete in a slam, it's just a humbling experience because I see people that have been slamming for years. And it's just I'm a newbie at this. And I would say before I call myself a slam poet, I'm going to win a slam. I'm going to win a Luna slam. And then I'll call myself a slam poet.
Okay. I was going to say you go higher than that, but okay.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a start.
That's the beginning.
Because I've been losing there. Like, I've never won. The closest I got was second place, and yes, came in first. And yes, is just an amazing performer, poet. He does everything.
Mm-hmm.
Is incredible. And so coming in second to him, I was like, okay, no, I'm going to come in first. I'm already second place. So first place. Once I get that, then.
You hear that? Yes, he's gunning for that. He's gunning for your spot.
I mean, he does carry the belt. Yeah, so it's gonna be tough to beat, but yeah, once I get there.
Okay. And yeah, so hearing from that and stuff, tell us what got you started in poetry, because I heard from the podcast, but I want to hear what got you started in poetry.
So it started when I was nine, third grade, and there was this really cute girl in my class. Mm-hmm. And I had the biggest crush on her from kindergarten, and I never said anything. And I'm not going to drop any names, but but I remember I was like, no, I have to tell her. And so that was the first poem I ever wrote right there. It was third grade. It was, I remember the poem. Roses are red, violets are blue. I love flowers, but not as much as you. That was a poem. I wrote it on a little paper. I like folded it up. And of course, because I was in elementary school, I gave it to her friend, mm-hmm. who was also my friend. I said, hey, you know, give this to her. Just let her know it's from me. And so I watched her friend carry it over. I watched her, you know, open it up. I watched her read the love poem. And then she like crumbled it up and threw it away.
Ouch.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it really hurt. And this is where it gets interesting. And this is where I would say I was born as a love poet. So her friend came back and was like, hey, you know, she didn't really take it well. And she was like, sorry. And she smiled. And it was in that moment that I was like, wow, I never noticed you have such a beautiful smile. And that's when I realized there is always somebody to love.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. That's yeah. a nice way of looking at it.
Yeah. So that's when the love poet was born.
Very nice. Very nice. I could see even, and then I also heard that you basically hooked her up with Facebook. You
yeah.
friend her on Facebook and I told her the same thing. And
she didn't remember.
She didn't remember.
And I was like, hey, that's fine. Did I make it up? Who knows? Memory is a tricky thing. You know, it's what do you really remember? What is just stuff that you've produced? But I remember that. I remember because that was very disappointing. And I remember my heart beating Ooh. Like it does before you're going to ask anybody out. You know, right. that just feeling of anxiety. Right. I remember that feeling pretty well.
And then she crumbled up and threw it
away. She just crumbled up and threw it away. And I said, hey, it's okay.
That was just one poem. It's all right. I'm good. I'm still here.
Yeah.
But no, that's like the guy that started a path. Mm-hmm. I see that did start a path and stuff. I did also see that you were in Sac State's Calaveras Literary Journal and also Sacramento Poetry Center's. So I was trying to find that issue, which one you were in. Is it like what year?
I was looking for it too. 2017.
Okay.
I remember Stuart was like, hey, yo, you should submit. And I did. And I think it was 2017.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure. I don't know if it was called the Tool Review then.
It might be still the Tool Review.
It might be. I don't remember.
Tool or is the Poetry Now one?
Poetry Now.
Okay, because I know we have a whole slew of yeah. I'm going to try to find that sucker. And I was looking around like, what is it? And then also Quarterly West.
Yes.
Tell me about Quarterly West.
Oh, that one was amazing, especially because I was published alongside Marcelo Hernandez Castillo,
nice.
Who is one of my favorite poets, also was a mentor to me during a short time at Sac State. So I heard about it, I think it was on Twitter, and they were like, oh, this is a partnership between Ndaki Poets, which I was already familiar with.
Okay.
Ndaki Poets, Marcelo helped start that alongside okay. Javier Zamora and Christopher Soto Loma.
Okay.
So it's basically through their work, undocumented poets didn't need to submit a social security number with their poetry submission. Mm. So it opened up submissions to undocumented poets and non-resident poets. And so they partnered with Quarterly West to basically I submitted through the Ndaki Poets. And if I got accepted, then I was published Quarterly West, which I was. And
oh, nice.
Just the names, I mean, Jesus Valles, Marcelo Hernandez Castillo, just so many talented poets on that list that I like started adding. And the Ndaki Poets do an internship like every year. And so just getting there, it was like my first big publication.
Have you tried to be an intern with them or anything yet?
I have not. Okay. No. That's the interesting thing about the universe. You know, sometimes opportunities are given to you. Sometimes mm-hmm. opportunities are held off. And I don't know yet. I just kind of go with the flow,
mm-hmm.
which is hard for me because I'm a person that's I like having my moves planned. But
right.
I'm learning to just stop holding on so tightly to the path I think I should be on and just walk.
Really?
Yeah.
That's an interesting pathway of looking. So interesting. What do you call yourself now as the change from the love poet to what path you have now gone to? What's the new label?
Love poetry is always the mode I love and write in. But now it was last year that I was like, no, I am a psychedelic surrealist poet. I love surrealism. And a lot of my work is filtered through experiences with psychedelics. So mm-hmm. I feel like it was just, I also have this series in the manuscript
mm-hmm.
that I'll probably read on January 6th.
Right.
I'm out. But it's called Loops
okay.
because I don't know if you've never done acid or shrooms or anything mm-hmm. like that, taking it, you kind of realize that there's just loops you fall into. I mean, first of all, time is not linear. At least that's not in my belief.
Right.
A lot of Native American and non-Western ideologists see time as circular.
Yeah.
It's a loop. It's a cycle. And when you are under the effect of psychedelics, it's just interesting how you see that. You'll just get stuck in loops. Bad trips I've had is just a loop of me going through the same negative thought, negative experience, just at a different level of vibration.
Okay.
So it's called loops, and it's just me falling in love on acid over and over and over and over again. And so that's why I love psychedelic surrealism. Also, it just opens the pathway to using surrealist elements to then talk about the psyche, the human experience, the way we grow, the way we learn to love. And that's always been my goal with love, the love mode, the love poetry mode. How can I help people find their own way of love? How can I create poems or pieces of or podcasts, episodes that can help people deconstruct the way they show love to themselves?
Okay.
Like the poem, the of the rock and the bird home.
Yeah.
Just because a love don't feel wrong doesn't make it right. I feel like sometimes you get stuck in a relationship and it doesn't feel wrong, but it's not taking you anywhere.
Okay. The investment's not going far.
Yeah. So learning to incorporate those lessons, which is something Buddy Wakefield is a master at. Incorporating lessons into the work, and it's just
really. I gotta go. I know he came out here, and shout outs to Grace and all them for doing that. I didn't see the show, but I heard it was interesting.
It was a hell of a show.
Nice. So you used to be a rapper.
Oh, so yeah.
What was your rap name?
Oh, it was Miracle 18, MYRIKAL. But that's like going okay. So
what's the 18 for part?
That's just my favorite number.
Okay.
I love the number 18. And so it started in middle school. So I didn't write poetry for a long time. And I was back then, I was more into like classic rock, you know, metal and like gangster music, like Chicano rap. And then I met
Dola Raza.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I met a homie who was like really into like hip hop. And he was always rapping. And I was like, how do you always memorize these lyrics? And he was always like writing things. And it got me really into it.
Right.
And it got me really into hip hop. And I was like, man, I want to be a rapper. You know, I want to be able to rap stories. I love creating rap stories. I've created a couple since then. And so, yeah, I used to rap. I used to like listen to instrumentals, and, like write lyrics and then post them on Facebook.
Okay. Nice. That was concerned. I was like, I heard you say I rap. And I was like, what his rap name was back in the days?
Yeah, it wasn't anything too thoughtful. In hindsight, there could have been a lot better names.
I always say start one and then you form into the next one. Yeah. Just like you have with your psychedelic surrealism, you basically form into what you feel is going to be your evolving part's name. So you can be Miracle 18, then you can be the next man up. So you never know. So that's what I'm saying. Being a published poet, do you feel more comfortable with the page or the stage?
See, I feel very comfortable in both now, but I would say the page, I'm definitely way more comfortable. I feel like I just let my intuition guide me. But essentially, I have a very intuitive way of writing where I just kind of let the poem tell me what it needs.
Okay.
If so, that's with spacing, line breaks, that's with how do I want to organize my poem? How do I want to spread it out on page? So it's a very intuitive process where I just write. And it just always works out in one way or another. The stage, though, I am much more comfortable now, especially after I've done two plays. That is really where my insecurity on stage came out. That is really where, okay, I don't project enough. Okay, my knees shake too much. I need to learn to control my energy in terms of having my energy run through my feet down to the ground and then having a stable core, being mindful of breath, being mindful of how I face the audience, being mindful of how I move my words with my body.
Right.
So now I would say I'm much more comfortable on stage. But if you had asked me this early last year, I would definitely have said page, because that's always been my problem with performative poetry.
Okay.
It's that there's always I always start off really slow and shy and just kind of, and then I work my way in. In fact, I performed at the Colonial about 2 weeks ago, and that's exactly how the poem started. I got up there a little, you know, it was my first time at the venue, so it's a little quieter, you know?
Right.
And then I worked my way up to great speaking volume, projection, all that. So I would say definitely the page, but now I would say I'm working to to have an equal footing in both.
Okay. And since you pointed that out, how is being an actor? What got you into being an actor?
Oh.
Sir, because I've already heard from Ike that you're a beast. He already said, he's like, that's a beast right there. That's a beast. I'm like, hey, guys, what?
Yeah, coming from Ike, that's a huge compliment because Ike is a little bit of everything. Ike can do anything.
Yeah.
Ike's one-man shows are just...
He scares me.
Ike is just raw talent. Yeah. So coming from... we were talking, and so the fact that he calls me a beast means a lot. And so I got into acting. I've always wanted to be...
Really?
I always wanted to play a villain in a movie. I love villains. I love villain story arcs.
Okay.
My favorite villain is the Joker. Just most because, people. Right?
No, which one was Joker? Now we got three or four different words. Okay. Now, which one's your one you want?
So in terms of movies, I love what Heath Ledger did. Okay. I also just have a bias against Jack Nicholson.
Oh.
And in terms of the comics, Golden Age Joker just presented, I mean, just this whole idea of Joker being this funny, just out of the norm character that's not just necessarily evil, but doesn't apply by those morals of good, bad.
Okay.
It's just anywhere, everywhere. Yeah. But I also like what they do with the storylines of the Joker. Like there was this, after the New 52 reboot, there was...
Comic Man right there.
Oh, yeah. No, I dabble in comics here and there, but there was a storyline where... You like comics?
Yes.
Okay.
You just basically point out one out there.
Okay, good. Because I'm more superficial. So I know the New 52 reboot, but right. I don't know every storyline. So I'm glad you know.
Right.
Because there's a storyline where like Superman becomes a god, yes, and then Batman gets on the Mobius chair. Yes. And then Batman gets on the Mobius chair and he asks the chair, who is Joker?
Right.
And just what they were doing, I didn't get to see the other half of that storyline. So I don't know what it is, but it's just the maniacal laughter that follows this idea that Joker could be this entity that exists outside of human form in terms of being a god itself.
Right. That being
a villain story. So I always wanted to be an actor, just play a villain. I always wanted to die on stage, just deliver a good, beautiful death, worthy of a villain. Anyway.
That's interesting. Because, I mean, I know a lot of people, I mean, minority. I even hate saying people of color because it's just saying color people without saying people of color. It's like, okay. But a lot of us like to get out there and they want to put some movies of villains or henchmen or something. We're never the hero, and it's always like we're the ones wearing the black or we're the ones. And somehow, there's always a way of stirring that. You see, the villain has more free will or more freedom to do things than the hero does, but people still want to be the hero in some weird conscientious way. And I'm like, oh, that's true. The weird thing is you want to be a villain. So I'm like, that's not really weird. I'm like, I can see that being a thing.
It's just the role of antagonist, the villain. It can, it's more challenging to write. It's easier to write a hero. I mean, obviously if you go with the Superman, I am perfect and I don't do anything wrong. I mean, that's just easy to write and it's hard to relate to. If you want to talk about anti-hero, a hero that believes in right or wrong, but their own version of right or wrong, that's more relatable. But I feel like it's in the villain storyline, the antagonist, the opposition, that you can really find a beautiful redemption. I mean, Zuko in Avatar The Last Airbender, villain. And just his redemption was beautiful to the point where, I mean, I saw his fight with his sister and people were pointing out how there's this move he does that knocks her off her footing. It was an airbender move. And the way he defends is very earth style. You know, it's just the details in the villain work. And villains, I think, that's why I always wanted to play one. So I always wanted to act. And it wasn't until someone I knew was like, hey, would you like a spot in this play? And I just said, yeah, without really fully thinking about it. I like glanced through the script. I was like, you know what? Screw it. Let's do it. If I say no now, I'm never going to act. This is my opportunity. It was a 3-hour play.
Okay.
So it really pushed me in terms of memorizing lines. And I would say that overall, that experience just taught me that I could act.
Hmm.
And then I got a role with Teatro Espejo and Water by the Spoonful, which is a play written by Kiara Alegría Judez. What a beautiful playwright. What a beautiful writer. And playing the role of Elliot, who is a Marine who has been honorably discharged, has a drug addiction. His mom is a recovering addict. He is haunted by PTSD and the man that... So it's just a role that was
a lot of layers.
A lot of layers. And what the director, Nicole Limon, what she challenged me to do. Nicole said, find the light in Elliot. Because there's so much dark. It's so easy to be angry. It's so easy to play this character as just frustrated. And just find the light. Find the happy. And it was through that character. It was through that character that I realized acting is a way of healing. Because you learn to find the silver lining in characters. You learn to find the silver lining in you. And acting is just a beautiful medium, especially theater. Relentless. It is merciless. A mistake needs to not look like a mistake. You need to deliver everything perfectly. The audience needs to be engaged at all times. So it's an art form that really pushed me as a performer.
Since you speak of that, you do speak on you have one episode where you talked about the poetic voice, where you basically talk about the speaker. And the way it seems that you also see that in acting as there's a speaker. It's not the words written. It's you're basically going to portray this, whatever has been written or whatever is the imagery you're going to set upon, and you got to give it a voice. Does that both connect with your poetry and your acting, or does it go in a different direction like that?
Oh no, it definitely connects. I mean, these two plays I did, that was the first time I ever acted. I have no training in acting, and I was just going off because. With my poetry, a lot of the poems I've written, a lot of them are in a different voice, where even though I'm able to deliver truths that are inherent to me, I do so through a different character. Like even with the little rap stories I like to write, you know, it's always, I like the storytelling. And because storytelling is just something that I inherently love, I feel like it gave me that distinction of this is not me, this is someone else. And as I'm delivering this, as I'm writing this poem, as I'm speaking this poem, I don't even know how to describe it, but there was just this element of the voice I'm speaking is not Jorge.
Okay.
It's taking on this identity of whoever needs to be speaking. So going into acting, it was the same way, especially me being an empath, being someone that understands other people's emotions, but right. I can too feel them. It was looking at Elliot as a friend, looking at Elliot like a living person and just having a dialogue. Sometimes I would just talk to Elliot. How does this make you feel? Or what are you really saying through a line? So going through that method, and I was very lucky to be paired with a director who had a very organic approach to directing, because I have a very organic approach to any art form I do, is what feels right. And so it definitely helped out, and there's definitely a connection where when you think of the voice in acting, in poetry, in podcasting, in whatever medium you're choosing to vocalize your art,
right,
essentially is what is the intention? Figure that out. And once you figure out the intention, just let the voice come from deep down inside you in whatever way it needs to come out. If you need to add more vulnerability to your voice, do that. If you need to add more aggressiveness to your voice, do that. But I would say it's a very intuitive process that every person needs to go through, because it's different for everybody.
Right.
And it's because I got really comfortable with my own voice through poetry and through being taught that poetry, being seen how other poets do it, that's really the same method I gave acting.
Oh, okay. Well, that's pretty niche, because the way I've always thought of the speaker's voice as, you know, I could write this, and people always go that connection of this is me, this is only me, and it's like, well, what if I give this to another person? Would it be the same effect, or will they give it a whole different spin? Because you gotta basically almost like let go of that. You've written it, but you gotta let go of it, because you basically put it out there. Someone else can read it and have a different perspective, just like the Bible. Somebody's always having a different perspective. You can look at the Bible and go, oh, well, this is the way I see it. Well, this is the way I see it. Two people can have two different meanings and go two different ways with it. So yeah, I can see where you're going with the speaker, the voice and stuff. Speaking of which, so what have you been doing so far? The podcast. What made you go do the podcast? That's one of the crazy things I'm trying to figure out. I was like, why you going for the speaker voice, poetry, acting? And it's like, oh, I'll do a podcast while I'm at it then.
it started with, you know, people just like, there was someone I knew was like, oh, you should do a podcast. And someone was like, oh, you should do a podcast. In my head, I'm like, look, I've had friends who try to do a podcast, and watching them failed showed me the seriousness of it, right? This is something where it would require, at least on my part, the way I saw it, research. I want to make sure I'm educated on what I'm talking about. And just hearing other people's podcasts, I wanted to have I was like, how do I develop a professional voice? But overall, I'm a creator. I am here to create, which means poems, movies, plays, right? Music videos, songs. And I want my hand in everything. And so when it came to podcasting, the thing is, I've always wanted to be a teacher.
Okay.
But the traditional teacher route in terms of going to get a credential and then working for free for a year, 9 to 5, and then having classes like 6 to 10, it was so out of my, because, well, to be in the credential program, I had to take like 3-4 tests, take 3 different classes, pay like $600-something just to apply.
Damn.
Right. And then once I'm in there, I would start a semester late because I didn't take any of the credential classes. So instead of having a year program, it would be a year and a half. Anyway, it was just too much. No, that's not for me. If it's not in my natural rhythm, if it's not something that could happen smoothly, naturally, then it's obviously not meant for me. So I've always wanted to be a teacher. And I realized podcasting is a great way to get what I've learned out there.
Okay.
And that's why it's the spirits and poetry, both poetry, written arts, creative arts, and spirituality, because I've been on my spiritual path for 2, almost 3 years now, and finding myself, working on myself. And there's so much I've learned in terms of consciousness, subconsciousness, interdimensionality. What is magic? Not magic with a C, but magic with a CK at the end, right? Hmm. What does it mean to be depolarized? What does it mean to be authentic? So much out there that I'm like, how can I share this? And podcasting is a great medium to share. And it also pushes me to research. So a lot of my podcast episodes, before I record, I'm like researching. So I'm talking about psychology, then I'm getting crash courses on psychology. I'm looking up the subject. I want to know who I can quote, because that's another part of presenting, you know, my credentials and like being an expert. It's, I also rely on other experts. And if you ever have a question about what I'm saying, you could go question the experts that I got it from. And here's a direct link. So I like naming. And it's just so much that you can learn. You could tie everything together. And I'm an English major.
Okay.
So it was just tying everything together it's just something I love to do. Like, if that means we're talking about Negative Capability by Keats, and then I'm talking about how Biggie's Hustler figure is a great way of looking at the different way of surviving in the U.S. It's so much you could tie in. And I think a podcast is just a great medium for me to do that.
Cause yeah, I was listening to your episode on dreams and surrealism, and just you put a lot into just the dream part, and about just the little things of the Latin American not poets, but Latin American tribes and stuff, where they will do with what they will take like this leaf or this ingredients, and mm-hmm. one will put under their under the bed, or under, or just like go to the dream and stuff. You just had a lot to carry with that. That's yeah. what I was listening to. I'm like, huh, I never really thought that, because I mean most Westerners just think of dreams as yeah, and then you've also put in Sigmund Freud and then put out information on that. I was like, okay, so I can see there's both ends of the spectrum. It's just not all the Western idealism. There also mm-hmm. is the Latin American idealism, how they look at dreams and stuff.
Yes.
And you should always take that in consideration, not just look one way, but there's also other people that look the same thing you're doing. But they take it away. Also, what you did with astrology, as you pointed out, with astrology, that was the Incas, that was the Incas.
Oh, the Mayas.
The Mayas. My fault. But how they look at days mm-hmm. instead of looking at as we all look at astrology at months or wherever you yeah. what sign are you? They yeah. basically look at, okay, what day is it?
Yeah.
What are you looking at this day? This how you are right now. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and if anyone's interested in Mayan astrology, it's called Tzolk'in, Tzolk'in, and so essentially, They split their, and the whole year was different. It was based on 260 days. I forget the exact number, but every week is 13 days. Mm-hmm. So it's called a Trikana. And so basically you can go to mymayasign.com, I think it's .com, and you could put in your birthday, and they don't need a time or anything, because essentially it's the day you're born that determines your path. So it's the day you're born, and then there's 12 tones that deals with anything from leadership to understanding. And then there's a Trikana, which is it's just like in astrology, you have your sun, moon, rising, that they like to call the quote unquote big three, your day sign, your tone, and your Trikana work in a similar sense. But essentially, that's what you're here to do. That's why you were born. And so for me, being born on the day of the Jaguar, nice. Shaman is one of the paths that they say, if you're born on the day of the Jaguar, jaguar, the animal that can see more than other animals, right? That has a very inherent feminine spiritual presence in it. So looking at, okay, then it got me more into shamanism. Shamanism is just a vast history of working with the natural elements. And so podcasting was just a great opportunity to share and condense all that I've been learning about and share it. And even though I'm not a teacher in a classroom, anyone who tunes into the frequency I create is just, hey, like, I get to show you a little something that I've learned. And if you think it's useful, perfect. And if it's not, you can let it go. And that's perfectly fine.
Yeah. Okay. And I also like how you ended off with a poem.
It's a great way to get people to listen to the whole thing.
Yeah. I got a treat for the end.
Yeah, like, just stick through it, please. And another thing is, I don't like creating, some people have podcast episodes that are like 2 hours.
Yes.
And I'm like, I'm not gonna sit here for 2 hours. Like it's I like working with a shorter time frame, because I realize, like, we live in an age where people want instant gratification and they want things to move quick. So a 2 hour episode, while it can be really rich in content, although sometimes I notice that it's not. Some people just spend like 2 hours just talking about stuff that has nothing to do with the episode.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how can I create an episode that's digestible, that you can, you know, just listen? Also, here's another interesting thing. I've had several people tell me that my voice puts them to sleep, and that's why they enjoy it.
I would think it's the background music, just because it's serene.
It could be, although there was this one listener who told me that my voice helped with her insomnia. It was my voice that would literally put her to sleep. So here's the other part. I was putting a podcast to be listened to, but the fact that someone listens to it to go to sleep, that's a different form of purpose that I did not intend. But I still accept, because she still tunes in. Says, I've been looking all over for something that can help me sleep. And this does a trick. You know, so if people tell me, like, yeah, no, it's very soothing, it puts me to sleep, I'm like, hey, I'm not even offended, because you listened and there's a benefit for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never thought your voice was that soothing. And I ran with you. I went on a mile run. I was like, you got to just keep going with it. Like, you're right. Gotta keep going. This mountain is high, but I'm gonna do it. It was a high mountain. I was like,
you gotta keep pushing.
I did have one thing that I took in consideration. I mean, you pointed out on your, I think it was the first or second episode. You basically pointed out about, you should basically take your poem, and because you do leave little nuggets, but also leave little exercises people should do. And you pointed out that you should take your poem, and if your poem ends off with a tragedy, why don't you make it into something? It made it, or it became better. And I was thinking up, because I have one poem, I think you heard it, I Missed Opportunity, where I missed out on meeting the girl because I was daydreaming so long that she basically got up and left. And I was thinking in my head, I could have made that poem where she came up and said hi, and then just ended right there. And people like, so what happened at that? That's part two. You got to write.
Yeah. And that's where a lot of where I was talking about how do people love themselves? How can my work teach that? It's, well, your writing is a product of your subconscious. And if you're always writing poems where you're missing out on that girl, it's not just means that you're missing out on love, but it's like there's an idea. There's a belief. There's a truth inherent in yourself where you feel unworthy of that happy ending.
Programming.
Programming.
Yeah. You did point out about that too. I've now gone and written your podcast about, it's not only informative, but it's also endearing to know that, yo, I'm in the same boat you're in. Come on. And I'll give you a little nugget of poetry, but I'll also give you a little nugget of just think of your life and the way your poetry is just like your life. You just got to just take a flow and flux with it. And then also, as you pointed out, about learning about having a job that you may not like. And even though you pointed out to quit, it's like, yeah, there's people that want to quit, but you always got to look for that. They have to figure out their little, what they're going to do next.
Yes.
Because a lot of people just don't, they don't want to leave.
Yeah.
They don't know where to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem.
And that's the leap of faith.
Yeah.
That's the leap of faith where I know sometimes I give advice that people aren't ready to hear, because I know I wasn't ready to hear at some point. And one of the big missions is my podcast is, I'm never going to tell you something I wouldn't take into serious consideration, and I'll never give advice I don't follow. That's why if I tell you, like in the episode of The Comfort Zone, I got out of my own comfort zone in that episode, became really a lot more vulnerable, and shared a poem that I was a little intimidated to share. So when I tell people, hey, if you don't like your job, quit. I'm saying that out of experience of when I don't like something, even if it means a lot to me, even if I'm just like, oh, I have to do all this work, go ahead and do it. And it's scary and it is terrifying. Like my life has really lent itself to that point because just being undocumented, it's the fear of being seen. Being that in a lot of undocumented orgs, they talk about the shadows coming out of the shadows to say I'm undocumented, or the fact that they're saying, oh, like dreamers or undocumented folks are going to go back to the shadows. Like this whole idea of shadows is being undocumented, growing up undocumented, living undocumented. It's a lot of not wanting people to see you. If they don't notice me, they can't ask me where I'm from. If they can't ask me where I'm from, then they can't prove I'm not a citizen. If they can't prove I'm not a citizen, then they can't take me away, rip me away from my family. So now talking about that on the podcasting, that alone, I don't know who's going to hear it. I don't know what's going to happen. Sharing poems in front of audiences, I don't know who's there. It's really getting out of the comfort zone and just talking about it. I feel really, ooh, angsty. I give that advice because I know I need to hear it. And like the episode expectations, I was really frustrated because I felt like I wasn't meeting my own expectations. I was like, oh, the podcast isn't getting the listeners I want. My poetry isn't getting the traction I want. I haven't performed. I feel so, ugh. I recorded that episode at a time where I was dealing with my own expectations. So I always love talking about what I can relate to because, like you said, I'm in the same boat you are.
Right?
We're in the same boat. We're here trying to make it together. So how can I give advice and how can I listen to, you know, listeners? Like what works, what doesn't work? Two-way street. Even though podcasting doesn't feel like it's a two-way street, your listeners play such a big impact in the content you create and how you create it. And so it's just one of those ways where it's like, how can I just show? How can I make someone feel like, hey, we're in this together and it's going to be okay. You don't have to quit your job. But once you get away from the fact that I need to work, you could find out what you truly want to do. Because we all have a path. What's stopping you from following it?
Yeah, I ask that every day I wake up. And speaking of which, Happy New Year, man. Because I mean, I know last time we saw each other was basically last month. And that was over at the Cafe Colonial when you basically were performing. I was like, this boy's performing here. He's performing the other thing. Okay. And then I also see that you can be performing with Ike, doing Ike Torres's yes. thing over at Luna's and stuff. So after my show, January 6th, everybody, you're going to be doing Ike Torres's. So is getting back into... Basically, it seems like you're just getting back into the feel of it because I know you were out for a while. You were you were acting, being an actor yourself, and getting back into the poetry scene. What is about the poetry scene that you are that draws you in? Because have you ever thought about going to like Davis or anybody else and seeing their side and how they rock or whatever? What is about Sacramento poetry that kind of good for the shout out that you gave me on podcast.
Of course, man. Happy New Year. It's such a blessing to be here on this side of the beginning of this new decade. Some people say the decade doesn't end till this year. I like to think we're in the 20s now. It's a whole new different ball game. Especially because 2018 was the year where you're going to start becoming aware of what isn't working for you.
Right.
Frustration, 2018. If you didn't deal with that, if you didn't deal with your shit, 2018, 2019 was going to hit you in the face, say, this is really not working. What are you going to change? If you paid attention, you said, this isn't working. 2020 is a year of blessings. 2020 is a year where your hard work pays off. If you ignored everything 2019, 2020 is here to let you know it didn't work. You need to find something else. And I figured out what wasn't working in my own creative elements, the way I was forcing myself to write. And what I love most about Sacramento poetry, the Sacramento art scene here, and this is why I think Sacramento's the best city in California.
this is take some people out.
Oh, no, it'll definitely will. Because people are like, oh, LA or oh, Oakland or San Francisco. Yeah. Sacramento has an authenticity that exists because it's not LA and it's not Oakland or San Francisco. Because I've performed in SF and in Oakland. I did the Root Slam. Shout out to the Root Slam. What an amazing organization. Gabe Cortez does an amazing job hosting. But it's when you have the pressures of the city of, if you go to Oakland and it's a slam, you're expecting something dope because it's Oakland and it's a slam. If you go down to LA, you're expecting, there's a caliber of artists. It doesn't matter if you're a rapper, if you're a poet, if you're an actor, if you move there.
Yeah.
That means I'm making my moves. That means I'm going to do whatever I have to. That caliber also comes with, I don't want to say an ego, but it comes with an ego in the sense of people are pushing themselves to meet that caliber. People are pushing themselves to meet that level of art. In Sacramento, people are just authentically them in such a beautiful way where there's poets that go perform there that have that caliber. But when they come here, like when I talked to And Yes, and he was telling me about the different venues in Sacramento, and he was telling me that if he really wants to test his material, well, he'll go to Queen Sheba, where there's an audience that'll give you a truly honest review. And I performed there, and he was right. What a dope venue. That crowd will truly let you know, are you dope or are you not? And then he was telling me that, when I want to perform some weird shit, you know, just kind of experiment, I go to Luna's, you know? So it's just like, and Luna's Cafe is not only a dope venue because of the poetry, but just because of the way people just express it. Like, I know I went there one time and there was this dude that literally just sat down and just read like manga comics.
Yeah.
And that's all he did. Or like the other time he got up there and he was just looking around the room, just stating what he saw. Like, is that great for an open mic? Are people going to be into it? Who knows? But that is the most brave and unique thing I've ever witnessed. And if I hadn't gone to out here in Sacramento, I would have never seen it. If I go to LA or I go to Oakland or I go to San Francisco or if I go out of state, I'm going to see some poets that really come with their work. Mm. But a lot of it really isn't authentically them.
It is true.
It's not. And they'll do everything. They'll I hate to say this term, but it's like they pimp themselves out for that 10. The judges, the review, they have to, right? Like I now refuse to use my trauma to get a 10, you know? And that is something that took a long time to learn, but I'm still new in the scene and I'm glad I learned, but I learned it here in Sacramento where were also saying, no, fuck that. You write what you feel is you. You seeing poets just perform vulnerably, truthfully, and they don't have to make up or oh, I'm from this hood or, oh, yo, I have all these girls after me or, oh, I'm so successful or I am the great, whatever. Just be you.
Yeah.
And it worked with my own facade. I was coming in romantic, love poet. I write about everything sexy. No, I don't need to write sexy. I just need to write honest.
Right.
Sacramento has it. Okay. Sacramento has it.
Okay. The way you explain that is almost like the way comedians do it, where they go to different rooms because they have different, you know, someone will go to the black, white poets or like white comedians will go to a black club just to get their jokes they've had, they've been waiting to die on that place, but there goes like Comedy Spot to get those kind of things. You see, the way I'm hearing it, it seems that what Agnes pointed out to you was that we have different rooms that we should, that even I've pointed out before to people, you need to check out each room in this place. You don't need to find one place and get comfortable because comfortability ain't going to get you nowhere.
Nope.
He's going to get you, they're going to love you and that's going to be your home. But you need to go out somewhere else and see if that's those same poems that you've been writing from last week to this week, are they going to work somewhere else?
Yep.
or do you have to rephrase it?
And it's the time that it takes. Like I have a friend who's a comedian. Shout out to Steph Sanders.
Steph. I know Steph.
Steph, dude, yeah. He's so awesome. We did a play together. That's how we met. Nice. And I asked him, I was like, yo, how long does it take you to come up with your comedy material? Because talking to him, it really gave me an insight into, look, comedy is hard. It's hard to come up. Hard to be funny on demand. It's easy to be funny naturally in the flow of conversation with people that get your sense of humor, but with people that you don't know that are just at a bar or they're just there for comedy.
Right.
How do you make them laugh? And so I asked Steph, I was like, hey, Steph, how long does it take you to come up with content? And he's like, well, about 10 minutes. I was like, yeah, a year for 10 minutes. And at first I was like, oh man, that's wild. Comedy is hard. I'm glad I'm not doing it. But look, I've been competing in slams for about 2 years, almost 3 years now. And I finally have three good slam poems there that I can go. 3 years. It took 2 years for me to come up with three good slam poems. So the creating process, it's good to go to different rooms because then you get to hear not just different people like showing different forms, but audience reactions. What are they into? What are they not into? What, as an audience member, what stuck out? What didn't? Well, what kind of tone, what kind of words, what kind of metaphors? What kind of way of speaking just gave you goosebumps? I learned most being an audience member than I do being a performer.
I've always lived vice versa. I've always been a person that's been I like seeing how the audience is reaction is to something. When I say something, now I look at him like, that's not the way I mentioned that. It's the way I saw it in my head. It's like, well, yeah, that's the way you see it. I'll make pie look, I'll make a smoothie look like a sexual act.
And nobody, the banana and the strawberry.
I gotta love it. You gotta love it. But nah. So what's going on? What's going on next for you in this scene of Sacramento? Whoa. Or the poets or the acting?
Yes.
Or what's the podcast? What else is going to be blowing up in the future of 2020?
2020 is the year to make the moves. And so now that I'm coming back to poetry, so of course, January 6th, SAC Poetry Center. Right. And then I get to perform at Luna's. I have my own feature. That's nice. February 20th. So I have two features. A great way to start off the year, and it gives me about a month in between. The way I see SAC Poetry Center is I definitely want to get some exposure to my written work. I feel like SAC Poetry Center is a great venue to, when you have poems that are written, poems dedicated to the page, this is a great place to take on that reader. I kind of want to practice being so when I publish a book and I go to readings like this, I get to say, okay, this is how it's going to feel. Okay. I want to feel being the featured published poet, right? You know what I'm saying? Okay. I want to get that feel. SAC Poetry is a great venue for that. And also, prepare for Luna's, because Luna's, I want to go full slam one man show type for the 20-25 minutes I get. I'm just going to be straight off, no reading. I want to just straight, I'm meeting Ike's challenge. Just the fact that Ike Torres is hosting.
Okay.
And he told me when we were at Buddy Wakefield, he said, don't introduce anything, spit. So I'm meeting the Ike Torres challenge, and everything's going to be spitting, and I'm going to find my own way. So you're going to see half of that at SAC Poetry Center, where I'm going to be playing with poems. So I want to do both. So that's coming January, February. So the podcast being migrated to Buzzsprout, I'm back March 2020. And so my goal is record like 5 episodes, have content ready to go so I can publish on a regular basis. Because when you publish regularly, because right now I was publishing like biweekly.
Okay.
It's great. It's great for me to like research. But no, I want content out, because as listeners, you don't want an artist that's going to be releasing. And that's just like the sad, like just the way audiences work. You want digestible. You want consistency.
Hunger. Yeah.
You want the hunger. So there's a hunger. So it's like not letting the pressure of that hunger get to me. But I want to, especially the audience that is following me through this journey, I want to show you how grateful I am for that. I want to create a lot of content so that I'm just ready to dish it out. Mm. And as I'm researching, I already have episodes I have polished up, ready for publishing. So March 2020 is the return of the spirits and poetry.
Oh, snap.
So I'm doing that. I'm taking a break from acting. I don't know how long. We'll see. Don't know what's going to happen. I'm open to... Here's what I really want to do.
Okay. Oh, here it comes. So, exclusive.
So what I'm doing now is, my partner has amazing vocals. Okay. Her voice is so beautiful. And I want to incorporate more of that into the poetry, because she's also a performer. She's just not really there yet, you know, so she's working her way to getting up on stage.
Okay.
So making music videos out of my poems, that's really what I want to do next. So releasing music videos out of poems written content, so expanding into YouTube. I already have my first poem up on YouTube. It's called Stay With Me after Bianca Phipps. So having that poem up and exploring YouTube, growing into YouTube, another medium. And I really want to write a story. I don't know if it's going to be a book or a play or a movie script, but I want to write a story like that. I already have the first scene written up, and we'll see where that goes. But I'm here all 2020. I'm just going to create. I'm just going to be putting projects up and seeing where my poetry goes. Really putting a lot of effort. I want to get my manuscript is getting published this year. I don't know how, but it's getting published. And so I'll release the name of my manuscript. I haven't done that before. It's called The Autobiography of a Recovering Love Addict.
I didn't know that was a drunk. That was a drunk.
and seeing where the autobiography gets picked up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's what's happening all 2020. And who knows what else gets picked up, because I'm always open to new creations.
Now I want to know about that whole autobiography thing coming out.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Oh yeah, of course.
It's gonna be a lot.
I wrote it about a year and a half ago. And so essentially I had this year of just falling in love in the most unexpected places, most unexpected ways, with all these different people, on all these different kinds of drugs, on all these different kinds of experiences. I was a love addict because I didn't love myself, so I looked for that in other people. Before I started my poetry journey, I was just like, I just knew there was something out there.
Right.
I ended a relationship of like 2 years because of this gut feeling.
Damn.
I was like, there's something out there. I need to find it. So I ended a relationship and I just took that leap of faith and I just jumped. And so the autobiography is inspired by that journey.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so since we're coming down to the closing of it, where can people find you on social media? Well, actually, where can people find your work? Because I was already right now still looking for that SBC poem in there. I'm going to find it in Tuli Review or something. I'm going to find that. But right. Tell people where they can find your work and stuff.
Right now, Instagram, Jorge Quintana Poetry, is where I'm updating information on the podcast and where I like show or where I'm showing my work. Mm. That's where I'm going to be performing. That's where you're going to see it. This is in lieu of a website, which also might be coming 2020. I didn't talk about it, but there's a whole, I'm going to make my own website. So we'll see what happens. It might not be this year, but right now Instagram is taking the place that is the center. Mm. If you want to read more of my work, that's where you're going to find my YouTube. I have my little bio FM. That's where you'll get links to my podcast. You'll get links to the poetry that I've already published on YouTube and on Quarterly West. And that's essentially my hub right now. That's my HQ.
Instagram or?
Instagram, yes. Okay, Instagram. Okay. Yes, thank you. That's my HQ, Instagram. I just deleted my Twitter.
Oh, okay.
So Twitter's gone. And I mean, Facebook. I mean, Facebook's just really in a weird place.
That's everything.
Instagram's definitely the best place because eventually I'll have an Instagram page for my podcast and eventually I'll have a website. So once I'm like a beginner, so I see where I want to go, but right now.
Okay.
Look for me on Instagram, Jorge Quintana Poetry.
And also, what's the name of the podcast and where they find that?
Oh, thank you. Look at that. Thank you for teaching me this. Yeah, so you can find my podcast, The Spirits and Poetry. Right now, it's on Apple Podcast and on Spotify and Anchor. But recently, it's on Buzzsprout, and I'm going to be working to get it on like Google Play and like all these different mediums. But for right now, The Spirits and Poetry, Spotify, Apple Music. You should check it out.
He's coming back out again, people, with more episodes in March 2020. So keep an eye on that stuff and everything else. But thank you, man, for coming out.
Of course.
Oh, hey, man, we've known each other for almost two years now, getting close. And every time I see you, man, I don't want to beat you. I just want to like, this man's gonna bring something new out, and just keep an eye on him. And just hearing that you're gone beyond just poetry, you've gone also the acting, also being a podcaster and doing other stuff. I mean, that's the way it's supposed to be. Yeah. That's the way I like it's evolve here. Don't just stick with one thing, but evolve and also progress as you evolve. So I'm glad that you are evolving. And I'm also glad that he's going to be my show on SBC on January 6th. Please be there. It'll be two people. It'll be him and also Auntie Vice. And I just wanted to say, please, you can find all your information about the Sacramento Poetry over on sacramentopoetry.com. And you can also find Iambic on restwonderland.com /iambic. If you need to find any information about me, please go to my, you can go on to my website, reswonderland.com, or you can go to Instagram, Rest Wonder, or you can go to Facebook, Sharon E. Smith. That is Sharon, Charon E. Smith. To find out more information on what's going on, please check out that information. Thank you again to Jorge, and we'll talk to y'all later. Bye. Peace.